Hey folks, thanks for tuning in. I'm Ariana Benincasa with Tattoo Sound and Music, and you're listening to Sisters of Sound. Today we're back in class with Ryerson University professor Lori Beckstead. She teaches audio and digital media at their RTA School of Media with a focus in radio production, sound design, and digital media production. Lori is also a sound artist with a particular interest in soundscape recording and interactive installation art. Lori, I'm so excited to chat with you about all the capabilities of sound, and I have a feeling we're going to leave here today learning a lot. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks, Ariana. I'm really excited about it, too. I'm always happy to talk at length about sound, so any invitation I get, I'm happy to do it.
Awesome. Thanks so much. All right, so tell us about your early beginnings. How did you get into audio?
I think it kind of began with me just being very interested and excited about music. And because of that love of music, when I went to university, I was actually studying science, and I got involved at the campus and community radio station there and just loved it, just fell in love with curating music and talking about music and interviewing people about music. And I remember the moment when I was sort of, I was in the studio and I was laying a needle down on a record, so it was, you know, it was way back when. And I thought to myself, man, I'm really going to miss this when I graduate with this science degree and I go get some job in science somewhere. And that's when I sort of thought, maybe I can actually turn this into a career. So I pursued studying media, and I guess that's how I got where I am today.
Awesome. What school was that at?
I went to Ryerson, RTA School of Media.
Yep. Amazing. So you studied that. How did you become a professor at Ryerson? And what do you like about teaching this medium?
What I really like about teaching it is that we're a very visually oriented culture. So people are very aware of what they see, but they really aren't quite as aware of what they're hearing. A famous sound designer by the name of Randy Tom, who is a multi-Academy Award-winning sound designer on many Hollywood films that you've seen, talks about how sound goes in the side door to the brain, so it sort of sneaks in there while we're not really aware of it. And many psychological studies also echo this sentiment, the idea that sound affects us in ways that we're not even aware of. So I love being able to teach a medium that many people sort of think of as, oh, I'm not interested in that or never really thought about it, and to see a lot of students become excited about it and realize that there are so many opportunities within sound media that they hadn't even considered before.
Mm-hmm. That's so great, and that's exactly what I am aiming with this podcast, is educating people and saying, hey, sound is really cool. You know, it's more than just the music you hear on the radio. There's, you know, interactive installation art, which we'll get into a little later. I'm excited to hear about that. So what are some of the courses that you teach at Ryerson?
Well, I just came from my RTA 907 sound media course, and this is a sort of survey of sound across various media. So I try to press the importance of sound and how it affects us psychologically and how we can take that and roll it out into various different media, anything from sound in film, sound art. Today we talked all about branding with sound and how underutilized sound is in branding. I think the statistic is that approximately 89% of branding spend is spent on the visual aspects. But sound, there's also other information that tells us that if you add sound, if you have a complete sound branding component for your business or your product, that you not only double the impact, it actually is an order of magnitude higher in terms of the impact that you have just by adding that component and thinking about it. But it isn't something that a lot of people think to consider. So,
Well, that's incredible to hear. I'm a firm believer of that. And, you know, I think a lot of the time, you know, at Tattoo here, we work with advertising agencies and we do sound and music for their commercial spots. But a lot of the time, you know, they do very much see it as a post thing and they don't consider music or sound earlier in their projects, you know, when they're coming up with an idea. So maybe you can expand on a little more. Why do you think it's worth it for advertising agencies to maybe consider music and sound a little earlier in their projects?
Well, music and sound can be an incredible contributor to the storytelling. So you're right, it is so often thought of as the thing you do in post-production. So write the script, shoot the film, the commercial, whatever it is you're working on, and we'll just hire some audio engineers to sweeten it up at the end and make it sound great. But if you think about it at the beginning of the process instead of just as an afterthought, you can think about ways that you can storytell with sound. Often you can get across a story with sound a heck of a lot more cheaply than you can with video. So, you know, if you need to, if part of your storytelling involves, I don't know, maybe there's an ad and a Tyrannosaurus Rex is tearing through a community. Not that dinosaurs and humans ever live together, but that's a different story. You can still do that with sound. You can create that entire soundscape and have people visualize what it is that you're telling them through sound. So it's something that can happen off screen that can help to tell the story. And people say that the pictures are better on radio. And I like to expand that to the pictures are better in sound media. Because with sound media, we paint a picture for the listener or the viewer, and they bring the best possible conception of what that looks like to them.
Right.
So that can be very powerful in something like an advertisement.
There's been a change in the advertising industry. You know, back in 60s and 70s, it was all about jingles, and commercials very much revolved around those. And, you know, you'd get that earworm in your head singing that commercial jingle. But now, you know, you don't see that so often because things change, technology evolves, but I'm hoping that, you know, we can kind of circle back again to having commercials revolve around sound and music a little more.
Well, I think what we have now is, yeah, we think of a jingle as being a sort of outdated thing that we think of as, you know, 1960s radio, 1950s radio, that sort of thing. But I think what we have now is the Sonic logo, and which is similar to a jingle. It's part of a complete branding package, but it's usually a sort of 2 to 3 second...
like a mnemonic.
Exactly, a little sound logo. We've heard many of them. We've all heard the Intel audio logo. I wish I could play it for you now. there's the NBC chimes that we associate with NBC. There's, you know, we can think of a lot of different things. The startup sound on a Windows computer or on a Mac computer. These are sort of sonic parts of a sonic brand that can be inserted into many different media. So they can be part of a radio campaign or a television ad campaign. It can be part of an app. It can go in, it can go online. It can be part of even a non-media item. So for example, cars, for example, you know, Tesla designs the sound of the car, everything from the sound it makes at you when you open the door and get inside. And those sounds are very carefully designed and added to add to the experience of the brand itself.
What are some general practices in sound design, and how may a sound designer develop their own particular style?
Yeah, you have your own style, but really the sound designer's job is to help the producer, the director, the advertiser, whomever it is that they're working with, to help them realize the vision that they have, to be able to speak to the target audience they have in mind and to tell the story that they want told. So I think a sound designer has to be really nimble and be able to not necessarily bring their own particular sound to it each time, but rather to be able to bring a new fresh thing to each individual thing as required. But in terms of sort of general practice, it's really understanding what is the story that needs to be told and to be able to bring sound to it to enhance that story. Mm-hmm. So, for example, in my audio post-production and sound design class, we're constantly talking about what is the key thing going on in this moment, in this scene, and how do we enhance that with sound? So we can do things like if there's chaos in the scene and there's lots of things on the screen, we can bring forward one particular sound, and then that way we direct the viewer's attention to that particular small thing that's happening in among the chaos on the screen. Mm. So, general practice is to really know what the strengths of the medium are that you're working in, because there's various different sound media, to understand what the story is that needs to be told, and to help the director or advertiser realize their vision.
What are some cool technological advancements that have been made in sound recently?
I can tell you about one thing that I'm kind of excited about. You're familiar with Google Home and the Echo, Amazon Echo, these types of devices that people are bringing into their homes. I'm not sure how I feel about them. I'm not entirely convinced that I want to have something that has a microphone on in my house all the time.
Right.
But there is a pretty significant uptake of these devices. And what it means is that we're looking at new potential for how we use audio. Mm-hmm. So in other words, it's a different medium that we can bring audio too. So it's a new exciting time in terms of figuring out what are the best ways to deliver that audio through those devices. So for example, I understand that one of the ways people are using it is one of the popular things is for people to set up what are they called now? I think they're called flash briefings. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong on that. But it's basically to say, okay, every morning when I get up and I say, give me my flash briefing, you've told the device that my flash briefing should include, say, the news headlines from CBC, and it should include the latest update from my favorite comedian, cool. And it should include this and that. So you teach it what to do. But it can include what we call shortcasts, which is sort of 2 minutes or less. So podcasters are getting into this now where they do in addition to their usual 30, 40, 50, 60 minute episodes, they're doing 2 minutes or less. That can just be a sort of highlight of what they're talking about in the next episode, and people can access that as part of their flash briefing in the morning. And that's another way to reach people through audio. And it's kind of a new emerging thing. So we'll figure out what that means and what the best way to do that is. But that's kind of exciting at the moment.
Yeah, that sounds incredible. Wow. So I'd love to move into your experience with sound art. It's something that's very new to me. I don't know much about, but you did a interactive radio machine project at Gallery 1313. Can you tell us more about that?
Sure. Yeah, this came out of my research into diversity on radio. So one of the things I'm passionate about is making sure that media reflect the diversity of our population that we're serving. And so I did a survey of who is on air on radio stations here in Toronto, and sort of counted the numbers in terms of how many women are on air, how many racialized persons are on air. And so what I did is instead of just publishing that data in a stuffy old academic paper, I'm not a huge fan of them myself. Don't tell anybody I said that. But I just find allowing people different ways to interact with data is more fun. So what I did was I hacked a radio. So like a box, you know, an old radio, like it was a sort of 70s style radio.
Yeah.
So that you could tune the dial to a station. So let's say you tuned to 102.1 FM. So that's the Edge here in Toronto. And when you tune to that, there were also knobs that you could use to select. For example, you could say, you could select a knob and turn it to women. And it would play back a soundscape of female voices at a volume relative to the percentage of women on the air. So I forget the exact percentage at the moment, but let's just for argument's sake say that there were 30% female hosts on 102.1. So if you turn the knob to women, you'd hear a soundscape playing back at about 30% volume. And then I also hacked the antenna on the radio so that it acted sort of like a VU meter. So if it was 30% women, the antenna would kind of go up to about a 30% mark as if it were a VU meter. So then you could also, there was another knob where you could select racialized person or non-racialized person. So you could, in combination, you could figure out, okay, how many racialized men are on this particular station. And so you could interact with this radio and it would deliver data and information to you through the sound, through the visual of this sort of the antenna looking like a view meter to tell you about how much out of 100 this particular combination was. And there was also a display on the radio that just gave you the actual number. So it made it a little easier on people. But it was a fun little interactive way to use data and sound.
That sounds incredible. Wow.
Oh, thanks.
Are there any other sound art projects that you've created?
My favorite one was, actually I wasn't a fan of the title, Or Reality was the title, but what I did was I recorded a number of soundscapes. This was when I spent a year in Sydney, Australia, traveled around Australia a little bit and did a lot of soundscape recording. And then I did an installation whereby in a big empty room. So basically, I didn't want any visual stimulus in this room whatsoever. So it was basically a big empty room with the walls just painted black. And I handed people a set of headphones as they walked in, wireless headphones. Mm-hmm. And I had sort of hacked the headphones so that on the top there was a colored light, and I had some cameras rigged up on the ceiling of this room that would track where the person moved in the room. Okay. And so I had it set up so that depending where you went in the room, you would have a different soundscape delivered to your wireless headphones.
Wow.
And there were places where the soundscapes overlapped with each other, so you could kind of find those spots and sort of mix between one soundscape and another by moving your body. And so you physically had to move through this space with total lack of visuals, and it was quite dark in there, so that people could really immerse themselves in the experience of kind of physically discovering sound and immersing themselves in these really cool soundscapes. So I had soundscapes that included things like, natural sounds from forests and by the seashore.
Mm-hmm.
So mostly it was natural sounds. And I think we sort of undervalued the soundscape from nature.
Yeah.
And we could use a lot more of it in our lives to make us
right.
sort of feel good and be healthy. So that
yeah,
was
for sure.
That was part of the exploration in that piece.
That's amazing. Have there been any instances where sound art has, been created in some sort of a real world situation or, let's say in a store or something? I've only ever seen stuff like this in a gallery. I mean, we did one project where we worked with hypersonic sound. We did a kind of Blair Witch promo where, we were kind of making people feel like they were in this tent in the forest. So we used that medium to kind of create that. But have you had any experience where, this sort of sound art world has crossed over with our real world?
Yeah, I think in many ways, certainly with installation art, I mean, you can see a lot of that in museums, to help people explore a topic or an idea, like in the ROM. You might walk into a room and there could be some sound that reacts to your presence, or even audio guides that are wireless and kind of automatically will bring you to the right sound file to listen to as you're looking at a particular artifact. There have also been sound artists who have done really interesting projects in public spaces. So I really love the concept of objects and places all having stories associated with them. History is full of this. This is the spot where Caesar was murdered or whatever, those types of things, but even everyday stories. And so a lot of sound artists have done installations. So for example, there was the Murmur Project. That was an early one here in Toronto where there were in various places where you saw a specialized murmur symbol around the streets of Toronto. So you'd see the symbol and there would be a phone number to call. And so you could just call and get a story about this particular place
Wow,
at
cool.
this particular intersection of the city. There's also projects where people can contribute their own stories and then they become part of the interactive experience. So it's kind of, it's a way to overlay stories or sounds, in real world spaces.
Mm-hmm.
So I see that as being kind of an intersection between It sounds funny, the real world and art, yeah. You know, if you want to make that distinction, I suppose. Yeah, some other ones. So there was a road. I'm going to forget exactly where this road was built, but it was a singing road. And so basically, if you've ever driven over a road that's been like scraped off the top because they're about to repave it, and it's there's a lot of like ridges in it, yes. And you drive over and it kind of makes a pitched sound. So they actually carved the ridges in the road so that as you drove over it at a particular speed, you had to be going the exact speed limit or whatever of the road. It actually played a song.
No
you could hear
way.
A song playing. Yeah, there's other things. Things like stairways in public spaces, like in transit stations where, you know, each stair is a different note. And so people would play on the stairs, jumping up and down. And I mean, I think that these interactive sound spaces where they do exist really invite people to kind of experience a place or a space differently and kind of have fun interacting with it.
Yeah. Those all sound so cool. I wish I could experience.
Right?
Experience those. Can you speak to your experience as a female in the audio digital media communities? Is it primarily male dominated or do you see a balance?
I think in the sound world, it's still surprisingly male dominated. Once upon a time, before I became a professor, I thought that I wanted to be a sound engineer, and I did want to be a sound engineer. But I was really turned off of that path as I started interning and getting part-time jobs and doing work in various sound studios because the climate was horrible as a woman. You were, you know, A, you stood out like a sore thumb because it was like, whoa, there's a woman in the studio, you know? And it was sort of assumed you were either a client or you were just there to, I don't know. I don't know what it was assumed, but they certainly didn't think that you had any business being anywhere near a mixing board. So, you know, it wasn't a very welcoming environment at the time. Going back, you know, 20 years. And I look around today and I still see, you know, I mean, the Oscar nominees for the sound categories, you know, vastly populated by men. You know, there's sometimes it's a surprise when you see one or two women who might be in that mix somewhere. So it's a funny thing. I don't really have an explanation for you as to why that is. I think it's traditionally been seen as a, you know, heavily technical field, you know, DJing even. I remember being a DJ in a bar and people would come up to the DJ booth. This happened on more than one occasion where they'd come up to the DJ booth and I'd be standing there and they'd say, "Where's the DJ?" And, you know, I mean, the underlying thing is you were expecting a guy, right? And I'm like, and I just look at them and go, I don't know. He took a break, you know? So it's a funny thing. So that was kind of my early experience. I think more and more women are getting into it. And good on you for doing this podcast because, as you say, you know, women are still somewhat of a rare breed in many of these. You know, it's a problem across many aspects, like you say, music production, you know, audio post production, that sort of thing. So I think it's a great idea for you to do this type of podcast and shine a light on it and encourage other women to consider this as a field to get into because it's an amazing field.
It is.
I love what I do. Right? I love teaching people about all aspects of sound. And yeah, it's great.
I completely agree with that. So what are your goals for the future? And where do you see the future of audio going? I know you kind of touched on this a little before, but if there's anything else that you might want to...
I know. I can tell you one thing. One thing that comes up a lot, because I teach radio courses as well, is you know, people are like, radio? Isn't that a dying medium? Right? This is kind of the standard, the prevailing wisdom about radio. I can tell you, I can pull out the stats for you. It's definitely not dying. It's making money. There's people, you know, people are listening to the radio from all age groups, et cetera, et cetera. But it's a funny thing because people said that about radio when television was invented. So, you know, rewind 60, 70 years ago and they're like, oh, well, I guess we don't need radio anymore because now we have pictures. So who's going to want to listen to the radio? Well, it turned out people did still have a need for radio and that it fills a different need in our lives True. Than visual media does. And it's an intimate medium. All sound media are very intimate. We often listen with headphones or even earbuds. And I always think of earbuds as being something you actually insert into your body. Mm-hmm. So it's quite intimate in that way. It's often one-on-one speaking with or hearing a human voice talking to you over the radio or through a podcast is a really intimate connection. It's very conversational. It's very personal. So I just think audio media in general will always have a place in our world, and a very important one, and a currently, I think, undervalued one. And I think smart people who are media producers will kind of make sound more of a priority in their processes and their planning.
All right. Well, Lori, thank you so much for joining us today. I learned so much about sound art, and my wheels are turning in my head right now. I just have so many ideas. I want to run to my boss right now and just create all these installations. I think we can definitely take audio to new levels in the future. So thank you so much for chatting with us.
Oh, it's been my real pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me to do this. It's been really fun to talk to you.